Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we're talking about Fall Out Boy. This is a good one because this is the band that I sometimes get confused with another group that we've talked about here on Soundography, Panic at the Disco. And even listening to some of their music this time around, I kind of got like some Panic at the Disco vibes. I'm like, wait, this song isn't Panic at the Disco? Well,
there's some crossover.
Not only is there some crossover, but there's also some vocal things that Pete Wentz does that Brandon Urie also does, like a falsetto that comes in mm-hmm. after a very bombastic singing of a verse. So the band was formed in Wilmette, Illinois in 2001. It was born as part of Chicago's punk scene. Pete Wentz and Joe Troman formed the band as a pop punk act. And through the early days, there were a number of lineup changes before they settled on the lineup that we all know and love. Patrick Stump joined shortly afterwards. And then the group had a run of drummers before they finally found Andy Hurley. The group was named after, of course, the character in The Simpsons, the partner of Radioactive Man, Fallout Boy. And the first demo was recorded in a basement, but went to the music mecca of Wisconsin to record a proper demo.
I'm so glad you read that without really skipping
without
over the
irony.
Yeah.
You know what? Because being a fan of the Violent Femmes, hey, Wisconsin is a music mecca. maybe not as big as New York or L.A. or Athens, Georgia, or
Nashville
or any of that stuff. Exactly. Nashville. Great one. But Wisconsin's got its own deal going on. I love Wisconsin. Oh, don't you know? The demo was recorded with Seven Angels, Seven Plagues drummer Jared Logan. And after some time, they were picked up by Fueled by Ramen and Island Records.
So Fueled by Ramen is the same group that has Panic at the Disco.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's another connection right there.
And 21 Pilots, too.
Oh, wow. Okay. So a couple of Soundography subjects, past subjects.
Yeah, all sponsored quietly by my oldest daughter.
Was this one as well? Was this another one of her suggestions?
Yeah, this was one of her. This was the last of her suggestions until I tapped her out. And we're not doing any of the other things she's listening to now because I can't do it.
Mm. Yeah, I can see why. A couple of EPs were released. One was Project Rocket, Fallout Boy in 2002, and Fallout Boy's Evening with Your Girlfriend in February 2003. That same year, they released their album, Take This to Your Grave, their debut full-length album. Basically, the lyrics were by Wentz and the music was written by Stump, and it was released in May, just after the Evening with Your Girlfriend EP. Because money was tight, they recorded 7 songs in 9 days, and then they added 3 more from the demo. The album produced 3 singles, Grand Theft Autumn, Where Is Your Boy, Dead on Arrival, and Saturday.
Grand Theft is like heralded and lauded as the blueprint of pop punk.
Makes sense, right? Like your Blink 182s, your band's kind of that ilk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, makes sense. The reviews called the album a spectacular debut project. Quote, Rolling Stone had it listed as number 5 on the 50 greatest punk albums of all time. In 2004, they joined the Warped Tour for just 5 days, and the crowds went nuts for them. That song, by the way, Dead on Arrival, was a rock band from PS3, the PlayStation game, a staple in this house. We were always doing that song. So it became one of the first songs that I knew by Fall Out Boy, but first, and then a big long gap before I knew anything else by them. If that makes any sense. They appeared on the cover of Alternative Press and in listening stations at Hot Topic, which helped them move 2,000 to 3,000 albums per week. And Take This to Your Grave was certified gold in both the US and the UK.
I never really thought of Hot Topic as a place to move records. But when I read that, I started dawning on me about their little record stand they had there for a while.
They do.
Yeah, and it totally makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. The buttons and the earphones and stuff like that, for sure. It becomes kind of one of those all in one places where you hear the bands and then you can buy the t-shirt or the jacket or the bandana right there while you're in the store.
Now they seem to carry a lot of Funko Pop dolls.
Funko Pops. Yeah. Built after musicians and lanyards. Uh-huh. Kids like putting their keys on lanyards.
Yes, they do.
Don't know what that's all about. After their first album, many were calling Fall Out Boy the next big thing. And in 2004, they released an EP DVD called My Heart Will Always Be the B-Side to My Tongue. I really like that one, by the way. That was a cool discovery. The end song Fade. Shoot, what was it? No, it was the Level Terrace Apart. It was a cover of Joy Division. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Nice little cover by them. The EP reached number 153 on the Billboard 200. In 2005, they released From Under the Cork Tree. This album covered topics of anxiety, depression, and even looking at your own life.
This is pretty much the standard lyrical content for any kind of punk and emo band. Well, second thought, it kind of is a standard general topic for almost all music. So
it is.
I mean, like
a song about a girl and a song about a broken heart and
corruption and politics. I mean, they're like 15 right. topics for music, and it's kind of a given.
This one seemed to hit all of them.
Yeah.
This was their breakthrough to mainstream success, and the first single was "Sugar, We're Going Down," followed by "Dance, Dance," and a little less 16 candles, a little more touch me. Still around, and I know you're dressed up. Hey, kid, you'll never live this down. You're just the girl all the boys want to dance with, and I'm just the boy. You know, we haven't even brought it up yet, but these guys, their song titles are awesome.
Well, and I put it
they
later.
Work on their own.
I put it later where I said, I noticed that there are a lot of song titles that have punctuation. That doesn't happen much in music. These guys punctuate their titles.
They do, to a fault. Like, not only are they, like, they're punctuated, but they're also like bumper sticker ready. You know? Just made for t-shirts and bumper stickers and, you know, Hot Topic, key lanyards, whatever. The album From Under the Cork Tree debuted at number 9. It spent 14 weeks in the top 20. Music on the album makes references to a lot of pop culture touchstones, which will continue throughout their albums.
So this album has nods to Casablanca, Dirty Dancing, 25th Hour, the A Little Less 16 Candles and A Little More Touch Me is a joke about Molly Ringwald and Samantha Fox.
Okay, I got the Molly Ringwald. I didn't make the Samantha Fox
connection.
I was thinking for some reason... Rocky Horror Picture Show, but that's touch me.
Yeah. And then there's reference to Shawshank Redemption and the book High Fidelity.
So these guys just totally, especially Pete Wentz, if he's a primary lyricist, just throws his pop culture influences into the songs constantly.
Yep.
Makes sense. Wentz quickly became the voice of the band. After talking about his suicide attempt and his tabloid relationship with Ashley Simpson, he was far more visible. He also started a clothing line and a record label.
His record label was called Decade Dance. I wonder if he listened to a lot of Extreme.
Or NXS. They had a Decade Dance.
That's true. I bet you more NXS and less Extreme, but still, we're just coming off Extreme still. So
now, is it Decade or is it Decay Dance?
Either way. Probably Decay Dance. I just read it.
Could even like fit as Decadence. I don't know. It's interesting. It's a interesting little portmanteau, and I don't know where he's going with it, but I kind of like it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I am not pitching hate at all. It's just that coming off of Extreme, the first thing I thought was, huh?
Because
they're the Portmanteau Kings.
They are. In 2007, Infinity on High was released. For this album, they broke from their mold and used a wider display of musical styles. The title is taken from a letter written by Van Gogh to his brother. The album debuted at number one on the charts and inside the top five worldwide. The first single was This Ain't a Scene, It's an Arms Race. Then Thanks for the Memories, Thanks for the Memories, with all the vowels taken out. And the Takeover Breaks Over.
So I noticed that this is where I put the note that they have tons and tons of punctuation in their songs.
Yeah, for sure. The last singer was I'm like a lawyer with the way I'm always trying to get you off. Again, right from like a t-shirt right there. Just needs to be made.
Or a really bad pickup line.
Well, it might be. Reviews for the album were positive, but there was talk about alienating old fans with their new style.
So, speaking of Panic at the Disco, there are some really, really strong Panic at the Disco moments on this album. Like,
for sure.
You could beat mix them together and no one would know the difference.
And this is where I started really making the comparison. The next album we're going to talk about was really almost not interchangeable, but a big connection for me. Jay-Z appeared on the first track of the album, Thriller, not a cover, unfortunately. The album featured numerous different packages and track listings throughout the world, no matter where you got it, you got something different. Glenn said that he drew lyric inspiration from Lil Wayne.
Which is an odd thing, because I don't think of Lil... I never really thought of Lil Wayne as a lyrical mastermind, but I guess some people do, so good on him. But tying up, there is a song in there called, with the reference, Fix Me in 45, and that is a reference to the length of a therapy session. And so he's very open about... He's been very open about his mental health struggles and his openness to see a therapist.
And it's cool that sort of thing doesn't get in the way of lyric writing, you know, because I would think that therapy would almost dull your edge, your sharp edge that you need to have for good song lyric writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to hear that isn't an issue. Live in Phoenix, first live album, was released in 2008. Also that same year, Folle à Deux, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that completely correctly. It was a much more turbulent writing process with Troman expressing that. A lot of great guest stars on this album. Debbie Harry from Blondie, the aforementioned Lil Wayne, and even Elvis Costello making an appearance, which made me smile a lot. We'll talk about that later, obviously. The album didn't do as well because it was released in the midst of a financial crisis, but they employed a viral marketing campaign based on George Orwell's 1984, which still found some levels of success for the band. I Don't Care was released as the first single, and they started a huge tour throughout the U.S. and Canada. In 2009, they released Believers Never Die, a greatest hits album. This was done because the band was worn out and they were struggling with the changes in the music business, and they decided to take a break. As the break started, Stump was upset as the band's image as an emo band, or upset at the band's image as an emo band. Andy Hurley suffered from depression. Wentz was divorced from Ashley Simpson and had been using Xanax and other prescription drugs. He went back into therapy, but he found a way to grow up and be more mature. While on hiatus, Stump released Soul Punk, which was written, performed, and produced all by himself. He also got married and became more healthy in general. He also started working and writing co-writing songs with Bruno Mars. During that same time, Wentz started Black Cards, which was a duet with Bebarexa, a duo, I should say. Hurley formed the band The Damned Things with Scott Ian, Rob Cagliano, and Keith Buckley. The band stayed in touch during this time and said that the break was what they all needed. After some apprehension, Wentz reached out to Stump. They reconnected and quickly wrote some songs that were shelved because they didn't feel right. Some time passed, and then they started writing songs that felt like the modern form of their band. Truman required that he came back as a writing member of the band, and they agreed to it, and he came back. 2013, they released Save Rock and Roll. This was a complete reinvention of the band's sound. The album was recorded in secret. No one outside the band knew that it was happening. And the album debuted at number one on the charts when they finally released it.
This is a completely new approach to Fall Out Boy. It's still Fall Out Boy. You can recognize them from their older albums. But this is a completely new energy. They just feel better about them. Like, it just feels better.
A more confident. Yeah, definitely a more confident sound for sure. The album was called A Stunning Renaissance by Rolling Stone. The singles were My Songs Know What You Did in the Dark, a cover of Beat It, The Phoenix, Alone Together, and Young Volcanoes. Again, a wide variety of packages and bonus tracks were available worldwide, depending on which version of the album you got. They released a video for every single song on that album. There was also an EP released called Pax AM Days that had more of a hardcore punk feel to it. And they also covered Elton John's Saturday Night's All Right for the anniversary re-release of Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. A lot of great covers on that album. In 2013, they also released Live in Tokyo. The next year, they released American Psycho, American Beauty. The first single was Centuries, and it went quadruple platinum and was a huge hit for them. They expanded on what they started with Save Rock and Roll. They called it Hip Hop Grooves with Guitars.
Well, this was a monster album. I don't think anyone can deny that. I ended up buying this album long before I realized that we were going to do Fall Out Boy. This was one of those ones where I'm like, I liked a bunch of the songs on it, and I went ahead and bought it, and I never thought I'd be a Fall Out Boy fan, but this album kind of turned me into one.
Yeah, I really like this one as well. A good follow-up to Save Rock and Roll, but a very solid album all the way through. Musical references included Tom's Diner by Suzanne Vega, the Munsters theme, samples from Too Fast for Love by Motley Crue, and Lost It to Trying by Sun Lux, and Uma Thurman. Whole song about dancing like Uma Thurman. Presumably, it's funny, they talk a lot about the Kill Bill, like the one-piece tracksuit, yellow tracksuit, but
she doesn't dance in Kill Bill.
What's that?
She doesn't dance in Kill Bill. She kills people in Kill Bill.
Exactly. But they talk about the tracksuit. but the song seems to talk more about her dancing from Pulp Fiction than Kill Bill.
None of the references, though, are to the weird time travel movie she did with Ben Affleck.
Right. What was that? Not Gattaca. What was...
No, it was like Paycheck or Cashback.
Paycheck.
It was Paycheck.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. The title is, of course, Pop Culture References to Movies, American Psycho and American Beauty. The singles were Centuries, Immortals, which was also used in Big Hero 6, the aforementioned Uma Thurman. Irresistible. They're getting into the shorter song titles at this point.
Yeah, I think they're working too hard on the music to actually do punctuation right now.
So, exactly. They also covered the Ghostbusters theme with Missy Elliott for the 2016 reboot. I guess you would call that a reboot because it featured the original actors, but not playing Venkman or Stance or anything.
But like the that. Ghostbusters happened in that world, so it's weird.
That's true.
It's a weird place for that movie to live.
And it's kind of what's happening with this current one too. Like, you've got, you know, the descendants of a Ghostbusters in this new one that was going to come out this year, and I think now has been pushed out to March of next year. In 2018, they released Mania. They had released four singles ahead of this album: Young and Menace, Champion, Last of the Real Ones, and Hold Me Tight or Don't. They released an EP called La Mania that had many unfinished demos. Then they released Lake Effect Kid with a demo of that song. In 2019, they released a second half or a second volume to their Greatest Hits album, with Dear Future Self Hands Up added as a new song, which was also released as a single.
As we were putting together, or as I was putting together my playlist, I don't know if Brian had the same trouble, but they know how to put together a Greatest Hits album where their songs that are good are all on there. So part of me tried to ignore that, and like part of me really wanted to adhere to our rule that we've set. There's another part of me really wanted to ignore it, because they really do know how to put together a great greatest hits.
They do really, really good songs on there. Was Bob Dylan, was that previously released before the greatest hits? Because that one felt like it was new to me when I heard that one. I actually thought that was a new addition, but maybe not.
I don't know. I don't remember.
Well, irregardless of that, why don't you tell us about statistics and general notes?
Corktree has triple platinum status. It sold 4 million copies worldwide. They have appeared on and in numerous video games, soundtracks. I mean, Brian mentioned the PS3 Guitar Hero, but they've been all over games.
Right. I'm sure they're like Grand Theft Auto's probably used some of their songs.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me one bit.
And then American Beauty, American Psycho sold 218,000 copies in its first week and was the third number one album for them. Instrumental, they were very instrumental in the career of Panic at the Disco, like we talked about. Then they've won 2 AP Music Awards, 5 Kerrang Awards, which is weird because I think of Kerrang as more Mastodon and Behemoth and not Fall Out Boy, but still they've won 5. They've won 5 Teen Choice Awards and have been nominated for Grammys and so many other things that they've been nominated for and won. We could do almost a whole show on that.
Wow. Highly lauded and appropriately so. You know what? I didn't realize how much Fall Out Boy I was going to like when I started doing this week, and I really, really enjoyed it. So good suggestion, whether it came from your daughter or not. I really enjoyed the Fallout Boys.
No, this was a fun week. And like I said, last week we covered Badfinger, which was just like tragedy on top of tragedy.
Yeah.
And these guys actually seem to be heading down a similar road, not because of management was screwing them over, but because personally they're kind of getting
they had a bunch of issues.
Yeah, they were dealing with some stuff. And that break, instead of them imploding, they used it to, you know, fix themselves and to get healthy and to get right with things and to succeed. And then when they got back together, things really turned out really well for them. Mm-hmm. So when I made the comparison between Badfinger and Fall Out Boy, it really was the one was able to turn it around and the other just couldn't, no matter what they did for trying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's too bad. All right, well, let's talk about seeing Fall Out Boy in concert and hearing that one song that you know they're going to perform over all others. You say that our choices are, tell us.
Well, I feel like the Saturday, Grand Theft Autumn, Dance Dance, Sugar, but my choice is This Ain't a Scene, It's an Arms Race.
Which I think is a good choice. My prior to seeing your list, I would have said Sugar We're Going Down, because it's early and it feels like that one came up.
When these up your dogs were up in again.
setlist.fm right now. Saturday, their most played song in concert, 848 performances of that song. Sugar, We're Going Down, Dance Dance, The Saint of Scene, It's an Arms Race is number 4. Thanks for the Memories is number 5. Grand Theft Autumn, Where's Your Boy, number 6. A Little Less 16 Candles, A Little More Touch Me. 7, A Little Less 16 Candles, A Little More Touch Me. 8 is I Don't Care. 9 is Thriller, not the cover, as we mentioned. 10 is I Slept With Somebody in Fallout Boy and All I Got Was This Stupid Song Written About Me, which is a great, we didn't mention that, but it is such a great title of a song. There's like Our Lawyer Made Us Change the Title of This Song is another one, which I think is just brilliant. As far as their covers, Beat It is their most performed cover in concert. What else? Let's see. One and only Timbaland cover, We Are the Champions by Queen, they've covered in concert. Don't Stop Believin', American Boy by Estelle. Hold On, We're Going Home by Drake. I Write Sins Not Tragedies by Panic at the Disco. It's a song that they perform in concert. I'd like to hear their take on it, if it sounds a lot like the Panic at the Disco version or if it sounds unique.
That's the one where they yell about shutting the door, right?
I chime in with her, haven't you people ever heard of closing the goddamn door? No, it's much better to face these kinds of things with a sense of poison rationality.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I chime in with a, haven't you people ever heard of that one?
Yeah.
All right.
The shutting the door song.
Yes. The shutting the door song. All right. We've talked about their covers. Let's talk about who we'd like to hear them cover. I will go first. Mine is Oliver's Army by Elvis Costello. Look, there's no mistaking that Pete Wentz likes Elvis Costello. He's had him on as a guest in one of their songs. His songwriting, his lyric writing is very Elvis Costello-ish, in my opinion. So this would be an opportunity for Fall Out Boy to cover Elvis in a song that would really work well with their style. All of His Army is this rockin' piece from Armed Forces. And I feel like it's right in Fall Out Boy's wheelhouse. The question is, do they cover up the N-word and do they sing it without that? Because that's the one weird thing in that song is that there's a dropped N-word in there that is not meant in a derogatory way.
But still,
these days we don't care.
Yeah,
these days we don't care.
Yeah,
and we shouldn't, because that's a word that doesn't belong in music. But that'd be my choice, Oliver's Army. I'd love to hear their version of it. How about you?
I picked Owner of a Lonely Heart by Yes. And I picked it because the song's already kind of got a bounce to it. And I really think that Fall Out Boy could lean into the bounce. And that would really change the mood of the song. But because they have this crowd singing things they do, and they've got kind of a unique musical approach, I think they could really Fall Out Boy the mess out of this. And like that moment in Owner of a Lonely Heart where it sounds like they're just knocking dishes off the counter. Yes. They could really do some cool things musically with that. And I really would like to hear them kind of take on Owner of a Lonely Heart.
I would too. That actually would be a fun one. I'm with you on that. Very cool. Good choices. All right. Let's talk about their songs and the playlist that we would make. You know, you go and you pick up the two halves of their greatest hits albums or the two volumes. You want some additional stuff, right? You want some additional things to listen to. We're going to give you some deeper cuts that can go along with those greatest hits. My choices are Champagne for My Real Friends. This is from the first album, Cork Tree. The chorus has a good solid hook in it, which I love. And it's got a simple but unique chord progression that you don't hear a lot in their music and others of their songs. It was the first song to make me take notice, and that wasn't one of the singles. So it was good. The next couple songs come from that Folie Deux album, which, by the way, hands down my favorite album of the bunch. I just really like the kind of an ELO feel to the whole album. And this song, What a Catch, Donnie.
You'll never catch us, so just let me be. Instead, I'll be fine till the hospital or American embassy. Miss Black said, I still want you back. Yeah.
No surprise, people are going to say, of course you picked that, because it's got Elvis Costello as a guest vocalist. I'm totally fine with that. Totally fine. It fits perfectly with their style. And even does one of my favorite things, which is a callback to a previous song. They actually sing a little bit of Sugar We're Going Down in What a Catch, Donnie. $20 Nosebleed, also from that same album. It's like a crossband sequel to 9 in the Afternoon by, Panic at the Disco. It's very bombastic and show-tuny. I've thought a lot about doing a mix disc or mix playlist where I go back and forth between FOB and Panic, just because I feel like their music really complements each other. It doesn't feel sound-alike. It just feels like they go together very well. I did jump over to American Beauty, American Psycho for The Kids Aren't Alright. This one rocks, but there's enough different from their other music that it caught my attention and made me take notice, which I always mark down when a song does that when we're listening to the library of some band. And the last one isn't on one of their albums at all. It's a song from an album called Almost Alice, which was a bunch of songs inspired by both Lewis Carroll's original Alice in Wonderland and the Tim Burton movie that came out a few years ago. The song is called In Transit, and it's Pete Wentz and Mark Hoppus from Blink-182. Another band that we mentioned quite a bit in this episode. It's a really cool down-tempo track that I didn't realize how few down-tempo tracks both of these bands do, Blink-182 and Fall Out Boy do, until I heard this and said, oh yeah, you know, you don't hear a lot of down-tempo tracks from these guys. It's also got a little bit of a Doors feel to it, which I kind of dug, called In Transit by Hoppus and Wentz.
When I was looking for that song to put on the playlist, for the Spotify playlist, I listened to a lot of it because I didn't know about this one. And I really liked it. And your Doors comparison is really, really fitting.
Yeah, it's got that kind of cool Jim Morrison introspective feel to it. The whole album's really good. You said you listened to, did you listen to some of the album or something?
No, just that song as I was putting on the list. Oh, yeah. I'll go back and listen to the album later.
Check out the rest of that album. It's good. It's really cool to have an album that's inspired by the original writings, and all the titles come from Alice in Wonderland, the book, which is neat. It's very neat.
I can tell you really liked Fall Out Boy because you didn't pick covers.
I didn't.
That tells me how much you liked them, because if you'd just gone through and listed Ghostbusters and Beat It and, you know, cover after cover.
Yeah, that's usually my go-to. If I don't like a band, then it's like, all right, well, these covers I thought were pretty good.
Yeah. So the fact
that I did really like Love Will Tear Us Apart. I really like that cover.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, though, that I think that it says a lot because you didn't just go, here we go, Ghostbusters.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, it is an accurate assessment by you. So well done, sir.
I think we've been doing the show for a while.
I think we have.
Yes. All right.
All right. Tell me your choices.
My first one was Head First into Cooperstown from Folie Deux.
wish I didn't. 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 I don't just want to be a footnote.
Say that so much better than I do.
I'm pretending.
Okay. You pretend so much better than I do.
I'm not French, but I play one in a podcast. I love the melody of his voice, the way his voice kind of is riding over the waves of the chugging guitar, because it's got this real chuggy downstroke guitar to it through most of the song, and he's just kind of lightly floating on top of that, and I really like the difference. And it's a good song for that. The next one I picked was The Mighty Fall from Save Rock and Roll. I really like what they're doing with their voices with this new style of Fallout Boy. It's a lot more, there's a lot of cool effects going into like the verse voice, but then when they mix the voices together and do the kind of the harmonies and the mixed singing, this just really showcases that really well as far as the first album of the new Fallout Boy. Mm-hmm. My third one was Jetpack Blues from American Beauty. I really liked how they build up the slow build through the verse and then they crash down on the chorus and then they completely reset it to go back into the verse. So there's this wave of energy that builds up and it crashes to the chorus and then you get back into it with a full reset for the mood as they go back into the chorus again. And it's a simple structure, but when you can find it and you notice and it's done really well, you can actually kind of ride the wave of that song and really enjoy the way it builds and lets you go. My fourth one is Last of the Real Ones from Mania. This song constantly gets stuck in my head. It is the most mind-wormy song ever for me. There are very few songs that get stuck in my head as easily and as readily as this one does. I love this song. I think it's great. And I don't know what else to say other than this is my favorite song of theirs, hands down. And if you've noticed, I really do like the second half of their catalog better than the first half.
Yeah, I think I did too. Well, I take that back. I mean, I think Folie D was my favorite album of theirs. And I don't know if that's before the 2.0, right? Like yeah. the band reset. So
it's right before. That's the last album, I think, yeah. Right before the reset.
So I think I like the central part of the band.
And the last one I picked was Bang the Doldrums from Infinity on High. Of the older stuff, this is the song that I like the most, and that wasn't a hit. And I really did try to steer away because their hits albums are really, really well constructed. So finding deeper cuts to kind of match that energy was a bit of a struggle for me. But I think these five kind of match with that. And the only reason that Last of the Real Ones isn't a hit is because it came out after their greatest hits album did. So it will be on the next one. I guarantee it.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah, I think we both decided we really enjoyed this week.
Yeah.
I had a really good time with the boys of Falling Out.
This we needed this after the downer of Badfinger.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, for sure. good choice. However it came about, good choice. Our next episode is going to be Hollywood Undead. I don't know what to expect from this because you've been, it's almost like you've been preparing me for Hell Week. Is that accurate?
Either you're going to like them or you're going to hate them. And I have no idea where you're going to fall. Right. So I'm trying to play it conservatively, thinking you're going to hate them. But there's a part of me that thinks you're really going to like them.
I can't wait to find out too. You know, I feel like it's going to be a big mystery to me too. I don't know if I know any Hollywood Undead.
They have written the most inappropriate song about suicide ever. Because it sounds like something written by the Partridge Family, but it's all about jumping off of a building. They've got some covers that I'm not sure you're going to like, but you could surprise me. They swear a lot. There's a line there about punching a guy in the junk at the end of a fight, which is really funny. I have no idea how you're going to take it. I really don't.
Okay. Cool. Well, I can't wait. Can't wait to say why I take it too. All right. Well, if people want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. Do want to throw out a quick response to things. Everyone who shared their list of 90s music after our 90s episode, 90s college rock episode, loved seeing all those. And you guys all had some great picks, a lot of great comments. Marcel, you commented that Hammond's choices weren't quite college rock, that he missed it. No, I disagree, man. I feel like Hammond told us what he was listening to during that 90s college rock boom and what he listened to during college. So I like the fact that we kind of both took a different direction to get to the same place. So, but you're entitled to your opinion and we'll always back you up on that. So thank you for your feedback, Marcel, as well. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at The Soundography. Make sure you check us out there. Follow us, throw us a tweet every once in a while. Tell us what you like. Soundography.com is our website. On that page, you're going to find all of our previous episodes, all 100 of them. Right? Or 101 of them, because we've done 101 episodes plus this one. You'll also find other episodes, little bonus tracks episodes we've done, and ways to get more from the show. You can hear our Spotify playlists. You can click a link to get to Amazon and buy what we recommend. Probably going to be the greatest hits in this case, one of the two, maybe the more recent, as well as a link to support us on Patreon. Thanks if you're supporting us on Patreon during all the stuff that's going on right now. We really, really appreciate your support. It definitely keeps the wheels turning, keeps the spindle spinning.
And I'm trying to be more consistent with sticking, like when I'm finished with editing, I try to stick up with a kind of a compilation of the things I cut out as soon as I'm done now.
Oh, cool.
And I think we're kicking around some ideas to do some patron-only stuff here soon.
We are, yes. So keep an eye on that. Oh, yes, some really cool stuff that's in the works. If you've got a review, please leave your reviews wherever you get your podcasts. And let us know. Let us know what you like. Let us know what you don't like. We love hearing your feedback. I'm kidding, Marcel. We do love hearing your feedback.
No, it was funny because I could tell he was joking, but it was just really funny. He was like, how preposterous or what? No, ridiculous. Yeah. How ridiculous. That's it.
It still has a little smile on his face. Yeah. We do love getting your feedback and your reviews, so please keep those coming. And that's going to do it. Hammond, anything to close out?
I just want to say up and at 'em.
Well done. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying, that's going to do it. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography. That was a radioactive man.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.